Well, if you think about the different personality types there are, David, then you just physically can't match up with every different personality type there is. And one of the great things about having someone else who sells inside your business is that, you know, they should be able to pick up the other personality types that you, mm-hmm. you know, the people who you look at and you go, seriously, I don't understand how they walk, talk and breathe. They are clearly insane. And yet the other person that you can have in your business can go, no, I've fully got them under control. I understand what they're talking about, you know?
Yeah, indeed.
So, you know, don't give up half your business because you look at people and go, oh, you're just a bit wonky, I think. Let someone else do it.
Ladies and gentlemen, the next event on the card is a heavyweight marketing bout for the small to medium business owner. In the red corner, from Paradise, Australia, is David. And in the blue corner, from an English paradise, is David.
Hello and welcome everybody to this week's episode of David versus David, the podcast for the small and medium business owner, where two of us, David Council in sunny Hobart, Australia, and myself, David Pritchard here in the UK, talk about all things marketing, websites, business, and so on, especially aimed at you, the small and medium business owner. So, hello, David, down in Hobart. How are you doing, mate?
I'm great, mate. Another great day here in paradise. And start of your day, end of my day. I can tell you it's been a fantastic day. And really, very excited to be talking on the podcast again about the ways people can get their business into gear.
Absolutely, because that's... you know, are they into gear or up a gear? It never stops, does it, really? I think if you're a business owner, you must think you've gone up through so many gears or changed gear so many times. You must be on about gear 2000 or something, let alone a five-gear car. But always looking to come up with ideas, analyse, discuss things that can just be applied relatively straightforwardly to any business to improve them. You know, sometimes these things are things that, you know, Maybe some of our listeners think, oh, that's blindingly obvious. But, you know, quite often, I don't know about you, but, you know, when it's you that's in the middle of it all, trying to make sense of everything, you sometimes don't see the blindingly obvious. You don't see some of the things that, you know, oh, that's such a simple little thing to do that you know, we could do that and we could improve things. And, you know, again, I don't know about you, but I go places sometimes, you know, you have experiences of physical store that just leave you thinking, you know, why did I experience that? Why was that so bad? Why was, you know, for the sake of something so small, that could have been so much better? And, you know, that's increasingly sort of moved on to the online world where things are perhaps more anonymous. You know, you're dealing with an online store with things that are notoriously harder to get hold of sometimes, but information is perhaps not delivered as well as it could be. You know, you're not dealing with real people. Maybe your experiences of real life stores mean that actually dealing through online is actually preferable to some of the people that you meet in the real world. I don't know, but you know, there's various things that you know we've been discussing the last couple of weeks, haven't we? Making yourself easy to do business with, and these are the kind of points that I think we're going to carry on and discuss a few more of them today, perhaps.
Absolutely. It's interesting you said there are two things there. You said, you know, you're not really dealing with real people in an online store. Well, yeah, yes, you are. You're always dealing with a real person. And my personal favourite is the whole, you know, if something is blindingly obvious and you say to them, well, you're doing that then. And more often than not, someone will say, well, sort of, or...
Yeah. And don't get this wrong, listeners. You know, certainly, I know for sure I'm as guilty of that as anyone. you know, it applies to everybody. You know, the things that you see and do, they quite often apply in your own world too.
Because it's so obvious sometimes. You stand there and go, I really should be doing that. And then a bushfire breaks out and you end up distracted, or a squirrel walks by and, you know, next thing you know, you haven't done it. And you come back to it months and months later and go, oh, I still haven't done that. And it's costing you money. And more often than not, it's costing you effort. You know, my personal favorite is we say this all the time, don't put yourself at the center of your business. You know, get your staff. You know, bring people into it to help you carry that burden. And yet so many people just put themselves at the center of that business mm-hmm. and make excuses as to why they're not delegating work out.
Yeah, only I can do it the right way yeah. and people need me, customers know me, and so on and so on. Hey, you know, well, regular listeners will know that I have a hand in a couple of businesses, and one of those is a pet accessory business, better phrase. And, you know, I thought that the first exhibition that we ever did, and, you know, before that, selling to customers in person and visiting them and selling over the phone and online and stuff, you know, you engage with people. I thought, you know, well, people know me and the kind of business. And yet when we had somebody who started with us and we started doing exhibitions and she was on the stand and, you know, people got to know her. And after about three exhibitions, you know, people saying, oh, you know, where has she gone? And is she not? I said, no, she's just around the corner. She's just gone to get a sandwich. People, you know, people actually start to look for the people, you know, it's not you anymore. And that's fantastic. You know, that if you take people on board that do stuff for you, they make their own waves in your business. And if they're good waves, and be such a huge asset and allow you just to step back and do the right stuff that you should be doing and actually allow you to step back and see that wood for the trees, you know, so you can actually step outside and think about what you're doing and direct things in a better way, really. So,
well, if you think about the different personality types there are, David, then you just physically can't match up with every different personality type there is. And one of the great things about having someone else who sells inside your business is that, you know, they should be able to pick up the other personality types that you, mm-hmm. you know, the people who you look at and you go, seriously, I don't understand how they walk, talk and breathe. They are clearly insane. And yet the other person that you can have in your business can go, no, I've fully got them under control. I understand what they're talking about, you know.
Yeah, indeed.
So, you know, don't give up half your business because you look at people and go, oh, you're just a bit wonky, I think. Let someone else do it.
Yeah, indeed. Now, I mean, talking about stuff, you know, you're talking about, as I said, the last couple of weeks, you know, how to make yourself easy to do business with. You know, I think we've covered a whole host of stuff. And I think last time we were talking about responsiveness and help desks, maybe perhaps helping you keep track of people's questions and queries and stuff and how they interact with you as a business when they've got issues. I mean, I think we were perhaps saying we could expand on that a little bit. So, you know, various things. I mean, we're just mentioning there about doing business online. And yeah, you're quite right. You know, you're dealing online. There are still, you know, people there, but there's a lot of stuff that can get automated, which is kind of what I was hinting at.
Hmm.
But, you know, I mean, obviously talking about some of the big businesses like Amazon, for example, this is a good example of what they do, I think, pretty well, which is, you know, you order something from Amazon and you know exactly everything about that order from the moment you click the purchase now button. You will receive an email straight away that says, you know, thank you for ordering, and the fact that they've acknowledged your orders, you know that they've either taken your money, and secondly that you know, it's not just gone in a black hole and you don't know what's going to happen. They've said, you know, thank you for your order, we've got your order, this is when you can expect delivery. That's comforting to know, isn't it? I mean, you know, I've ordered it, am I going to get it in tomorrow, am I going to get it in 3 weeks? I don't know. They will let you know either almost before you've ordered as to when you're actually going to get the stuff arriving.
And of course, there's two things going on there, mate. There's you understanding that it's on its way and them not having to field calls from you saying, when can I expect it? So
they've instantly cut down on their workload just from that one simple automated email. You know, if something's going to go wrong, you know, perhaps there's a delivery courier strike or, you know, the holiday season. Maybe they're actually short, you know, maybe they're actually out of the item. You know, it's so rare it happens in my experience. But, you know, if you've got the last one and unfortunately, you know, that last one doesn't actually exist, it's wrong, you can get a follow-up pretty quickly to say what's actually going to be happening. You're kept in the loop. You know, there's no surprises. There's no need to contact them because they are on top of it as far as you are concerned. And you know, knowledge and being told things is the main method, is a huge way to relieve pressure on your own business's systems. If it's, I don't know if you've ever been on the underground in London or the trains in England, when there's a fault, you know, your train is late, you're stuck in the train, maybe the train's stopped and it's not moving. You know, the worst thing to experience is, let alone 5 minutes, but in the old days, I certainly experienced it, half an hour to 45 minutes or an hour even, train being stationary, you're stuck on it. You have no idea why. And it's incredibly frustrating. Now, if they come on over the intercom and say, the train, blah, 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 obviously a train stopped, and this is because of signal failure, another train on the line, an incident, da-di-da-di-da, and some estimate of when they hope to be moving. Now, it doesn't. There's nothing you can do. You're stuck on the train. It's not like you're going to get off. It's not like there's anything you personally can do. You can't change anything, perhaps, apart if you're lucky and you've got mobile phone connection, you can maybe tell your next person you're meeting or something crucial that you're going to be a bit late. You at least feel aware of the situation that's going on around you, and that's what people like. They like to feel awareness and that they are not just floundering without knowledge and no idea of what's going on. As soon as they started doing that kind of thing and informing people of what was going on, the satisfaction rate and the acknowledgement that's like, well, okay, there's not a lot they can do about it, but at least I know what's going on now. That satisfaction rate goes so much higher just because they're being kept informed. So certainly in the business world, you will have happier customers, you will have customers that raise less questions with you, that take up less of your time or your staff's time, and you will end up with generally customers that are more likely to come back to you even though you've had a problem. And so you're being responsive, basically.
Do you think that the railways have a procedure for how they handle that situation?
I think they probably do now, yep. But certainly, I remember not so long ago, probably 10, 12, 15 years ago, perhaps, where they were infamous for not having that kind of thing. Mm. They were infamous for people being stuck on a train with absolutely no idea what was going on. So yes, now they have customer service managers on some of the trains. In other words, what used to be called the conductor, or perhaps even if you were lucky enough to have one with a snack bar and the guy running that, he will often be the manager. You normally have the driver and another person on a train, and that's the person who would kind of put that thing over the tannoy and over the intercom to let you know. So yeah, it's improving, obviously.
The reason that I bring that up is because we were saying earlier about people saying, oh, but that's obvious. I reckon that the greater bulk of people that I talk to on a daily basis and for the last 20 years wouldn't have a complaints procedure in their business,
mm-hmm.
for how it should be handled, so that there's a nice, flat, even response that comes out from anybody inside their business. Because when something goes wrong, the first thing that I see happening is that the person who's complaining wants to escalate it to the top of the tree,
mm-hmm.
To the person that they started dealing with all of those years ago, because that's how they'll get that problem solved. But if you have a proper complaints procedure, then it will be resolved in an appropriate manner for everybody that's involved.
And, there's no need for somebody to feel fobbed off that they're not getting to talk to the main guy that they started talking to, 3, 4, 10, 12 years ago, whatever. The right person at the right level can become their best friend. And, many a time, I've spoken to people, and the first person I've dealt with has dealt with my query, not necessarily a complaint, but just my query even, in such a good manner that at the end of the call, I've noticed myself doing it 3 or 4 times. I've said to them at the end of the call, well, thank you very much for that. You have a nice day. And I'm thinking, hang about, I'm the customer, and it's normally them that say that to me.
Yeah.
But they've been so good at what they've done, and they've been, whether it's dealing with a home insurance or dealing with, I got a coffee machine recently with, I had a query on something on that, and they were just so helpful. I'm going back to them, and those people have become my friends, but they dealt with me in such a good way. I came away with such a good and positive experience from them. I thought, I'll do business with them again. Not looking forward to it, but I certainly won't think, oh no, I've got to call them and deal with somebody I don't know, rubbish, and I'll get fobbed off. They just did it in the right way. So they've obviously got systems and methods and everything in place for dealing with things correctly, calmly, efficiently, and effectively. The customer goes away and thinks, that was good, I'm happy, and I'll continue doing business with them. So that's fantastic. And I don't know, the other thing you experience, do you actually measure customer turnover? Do you measure customer attrition or churn, as we call it? You know, some businesses, they just don't give a stuff about it. They almost thrive on it. You know, like the mobile phone industry is pretty infamous for it, or has been, where, you know, there's so many offers going around and so on, introductory offers and all this sort of thing. They kind of almost expect it, to the point where they almost make no effort whatsoever to keep customers, it appears anyway. You know, and the banks have been pretty similarly infamous for it over the last few years of mortgage rates, you know, mortgage deals, insurance, house insurance deals, car banking policies and stuff like that. And I've noticed recently that it always kind of bugged me that my home insurance company, they would always offer me an introductory deal. And at the end of the year, you know, as a result, your premium would go up by about 30%. Do a quick comparison on the internet and you'd find that even the comparison sites that we have here would be recommending the same company if you got the introductory deal. Now, they were still doing the best deal to new customers only. So I'd phone up and they'd say, oh, no, you've got the best deal because your introductory deal's finished, blah, blah, blah. I'd say, how about if I cancel then, and how about if I take it out all over again? Yeah, you can do that. Yeah, what are you playing about for flipping heck's sake? To be, you know, you've already got me as a customer and here I'm, you're making me jump through hoops to cancel my old policy, to take out the new policy, fill in all the forms again, to get the best deal on the market again as an introductory new customer. You know, you're really taking the mickey here. Anyway, and you know, cut long story short, but some of the banks are now actually changing that to offer the same rate all the way through lifetime customers. You'll get the same rate if you're a new customer or an old existing customer. Thank goodness for that. You know, you're actually starting to make a bit of sense now.
I had a really interesting discussion about exactly this with a customer today. He's in a situation where he does measure, you know, why he loses customers, and he does measure that customer turnover. And he said to me, you know what, year on year, we're up by 10%. He said, but we have not attracted as many new customers as we would usually attract. What's really happened is we've become more profitable with our existing customers. But, you know, if we'd year on year attracted as many customers as we had the year before, we would be much higher. And I said to him, well, I think you should be at about 30 to 35% growth based on what you're telling me. And yet he was at 10. So, but at 10, they're all patting each other on the back saying, hey, this has been a great year. But you can't continue in that cycle because eventually, you know, you'll have tapped out all of those clients. You'll be losing clients at the other end for whatever reason too quickly. And your business will go backwards simply because you're not replenishing the well.
Mm-hmm.
He was looking at doing loyalty programs for his clients so that he could maintain them for a longer period of time. And in the end, what we came to the conclusion of was is actually he didn't need to add a loyalty program in. All he needed to do was deal with the customers in the database that were already there and put procedures in place without having to add the, you know, the additional administration burden that would be there if he added a customer service program in. But what he did need to do was go back to those reasons as to why people were leaving and where they went to when they left his business to see what he could do to stem that flow out, you know, and just even slow it down. And then he could afford to focus the rest of his marketing on acquisition, because clearly his relationship marketing was working really quite well. And just by slowing that leak down a little bit, you know, and getting a little bit extra length of life cycle out of his customers, he could potentially boost his business by a massive amount and also reduce his overall marketing spend, because his dollars that were being spent would be focused into conquest. And we know how to conquest market for him, which doesn't involve then having to ramp up the spend. It means that you don't have to spend as much on the other end. So he would actually be better off. And it was honestly just a genuinely good conversation. You could see the light go on. It was like, oh, so I don't have to do... I think we were about to do a loyalty program for him because it was something that he'd fastened onto. You know, he'd heard lots of chatter about loyalty and loyalty programs. And, you know, you could see why he was wanting to move that way. But it wasn't actually what he needed to do to make his business grow.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's interesting. I like that one. That's quite very interesting. We've discussed this in the past, I think, certainly between ourselves, but, you know, there's the three ways to increase your business, aren't there?
Mm.
But there are really only three ways you can increase your business. One is to increase the number of customers that you have, you know, by reaching new customers with what you have already, or develop a new service or product that will attract new customers, perhaps based on your existing products and so on, that enable you to enter a new market or expand your reach in the market you're already in. But that's one way of doing it. The second way is to increase the frequency of the purchase that that they make. So, you know, make it as easy as possible for existing customers to continue doing business with you repeatedly, which is what we've been talking about today as well, perhaps. So, you know, providing additional customer value and building customer loyalty. So if you make it easier for your customers to buy from you, then you'll just continue to do business from them. So, you know, based on the fact you've actually got decent products in the first place. So, you know, you were just talking about there about customer loyalty programs, but, you know, you're talking about making them continue to do business with you by being, as we've been talking about, responsive to emails, to responsive to telephone calls, responsive to queries. You'll follow up and you'll follow through on everything that you do with them and keeping track of your responsiveness with them. But, you know, if you think about who you don't do business with anymore in your own life, is that because they were difficult to do business with? So ultimately, you know, you don't want to become one of those kind of businesses where you're difficult to do business with. And of course, the third way is to increase the number of units of a product you sell to a customer. So, you know, when you you add value to them. So if you want to sell more products or sell more time, if you provide a service, you know, you want to provide some kind of value-added benefit to them to build on that relationship with your customer. So, you know, you need to, I don't know, perhaps you want to sort of offer a 4-for-3 or a 2-for-3 or something like that. You're going to be increasing the quantity of what you're selling, whatever that is. And that's really about the only three ways that you can expand your business. So, you know, more customers, more regular purchases from your customers, or more units of what you're selling when somebody does make a purchase from you. So, you know, if you're doing those kind of things, loyalty programs, whatever, you know, that's more or less what you can do. And all of these are dependent on being easy to do business with, which has been our theme of the last two or three episodes of our podcast, really.
Higher average sales too is yes. The other thing that sort of that goes hand in hand with increasing the frequency, because obviously if you can get a greater frequency and get each person to spend, you know, even $1 more as you make a sale, then you're ahead by, you know, that extra dollar. And you're not having to pay, you know, in terms of advertising to bring that person through the door because they're already there.
I was going to say, I mean, all of those three methods there, you know, you're talking about increasing turnover. But if you've got existing customers, that you're increasing profit because your costs of doing business with them is that much lower for existing customers than the effort involved in attracting new customers. So, you know, yeah, I'd say a lot of this boils down to responsiveness and support and so on. So, you know, all sorts of things. You know, how do you know if you're meeting your customers' requirements or exceeding your customers' requirements? So they're coming away with a really good feeling. Do you measure what you're doing against your customer requirements? And do you categorize issues that customers raise? You know, do you this is what we were talking about the other week with help desk software. You know, it will help you find out common themes that customers are raising with you. And you can quite often build those into a self-serving, frequently asked questions section on a website, for example, where people self-satisfy their own queries. And that's really effective then. So, you know, and you can use them for continuous improvement. If you've got people that are constantly raising the same queries, you know, well, there's obviously something in your business that you need to deal with.
One of the things you touched on just earlier was when someone leaves the business, so they've, uh-huh. you know, they've exited and, you know, you haven't done business with them. Reactivation is something you really need to think about with those people. I see so many people who say, oh, yeah, you know, he used to buy from me or she uh-huh. used to buy from me. And so what is she doing now? It's like, I don't know. They're just having some sort of little, you know, adolescent hissy fit. And not trying to reopen that door. If you've had a relationship with that person and you don't believe that you've done anything wrong, then why wouldn't you try and reopen that door so that you can reactivate them as a client? Or at the very outside, find out why they left so that you can fix that problem.
I know why some people have that problem. It's because they're afraid of the answer.
Yes.
You know, somebody you dealt with has gone off to somebody else. You feel kind of awkward, embarrassed, hurt. Whatever, hurt, yeah, absolutely, that you're going to ask them, you know, why? And of course, you know, you think that they might not want to tell you, but put it like this, if you don't ask them, you'll never know. If you do ask them and they tell you to get out the door and, you know, get lost, what have you actually lost? You still don't know, you didn't know before. The only thing you can get from it is potential benefit by asking them. They may well tell you. They say, hey, David, you know, you didn't do this. You know, I tried to get hold of you a couple of times. You didn't return my call. Your guys didn't return my call, whatever. You were expensive. You were this, you were that. You think, well, now I've got something I can work with. You know, until you've made that contact and reopened and re-engaged, you can't do anything about it. You still might not be able to do anything about it for that particular lost customer, but you might. And more than that, though, you can help prevent it happening for other customers in future that you're already dealing with. You're aware of it. You might not be aware of a new competitor in the market. You might not be aware of something new that people are going off to source what you do from elsewhere. And you need to take account of it. And you need to think about...
Well, the choice is in your hands. Once you've got that information, then you're making the choices rather than just going... Oh, that's a bit frightening. I'm just going to leave that out there. We've discussed before, you know, in my agency, when I decide that I don't want to do business with someone for whatever reason, you know, new client, existing client, I always recommend them to a competitor, especially if I think that that's going to slow the competitor down. However, that does not stop me from trying to reopen that door. But when I reopen that door, what I do is reopen it on my terms.
Yeah.
So if you want to come back and work with us because we've had such a successful relationship in the past, we're very happy to help you again. But we would need to do it this way.
Yeah.
So you set the ground rules rather than just reactivating a toxic relationship. Yeah,
and you can do that. You know, everybody, it's not difficult to say to people, you know, for everybody here to have a good outcome, we need to work together. You know, that has to work to your advantage. You have to get what you want from the relationship. But equally, we have to get what we need to provide that for you. You know, in other words, we need to make profit from this. That's why we're in business. And you know, anybody reasonable will understand that. Now, if they're not reasonable and they don't understand that, well, guess what? You still want to send that guy to your competitor because, you know, you still don't want to keep on dealing with him because it sounds like he's a bit of an arse. You know, that's the way it goes with that one. But, you know, reasonable people, the people that you want to deal with, will accept that, and you can have. I've seen it in the past. I used to sell business software, and you'd occasionally, you know, struggle with a customer, and you'd sit down with them and say, you know, what can we do to make this a better experience for you and us? And you know, the outcome was more often than not like about 80-20 in everybody's favour. And you know, I was close to saying that in our favour, but. I mean, yeah, we got the business back. We had a better customer as a result who respected the fact we'd sat down and gone through it. And because, guess what? That's what the competition still wouldn't do. And the fact you'd actually done it gave you quite a leg up in terms of respect and integrity and a business relationship that over time, again, becomes immensely profitable.
But you were making the choices, yeah. And you were part of the decision making, rather than having some sort of, you know, negative dictatorship coming from the other end. Where, you know, and my personal dislike, and it's not just something for my business; it's when I see it anywhere, is when the customer is trying to push the supplier around by saying, "You're too expensive. You need to do it cheaper, or I'm going to take my business elsewhere." And you know what? Sometimes it's better to just go, "Well, that'll be fine then."
Yeah.
Look, I'm sure we can get together again at a different time, but I think you should go and have that different experience with someone else. And, you know, if they're willing to bend right over and, you know, take all of that abuse, then you're well rid of them.
Absolutely. Indeed. Hey, right. I think we've kind of got to the end of this episode, maybe towards the end of this little series of how to be easy to do business with. It's a common theme, I guess, lots of our episodes, but you know, we've been focusing on this the last 2 or 3 weeks about responsiveness, about providing information, about being accessible, about people knowing who you are and why they should do business with you. So I think we've probably come to the end of this little three-parter perhaps. So we'll be moving on to areas new next week. But I think that's been a really useful little series, David. We've talked a lot of stuff there and a lot of experiences and a lot of ideas in there, I hope. So if this is the first one of the series, if you're a new listener, go back the last 2 or 3 episodes and listen to those as well. I guess really for now, you can find our previous episodes on our website at davidversusdavid.com. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/David versus David and iTunes, where lots of other episodes and so on are there waiting for you to give a glowing 5-star review, which is what we always like. So I guess from me here in the UK, it's going to be over and out.
And from me here in beautiful sunny Tasmania, it's see you next week. See you, gang.
Yeah, indeed. See ya.
You have just been listening to the David vs. David podcast with David Pritchard and David Council, helping you get knockout results with your online marketing and advertising. Please keep in mind that the ideas, opinions, and information shared in the show are those of the hosts and do not reflect those of their past employers.